Hey everyone, welcome back AI enthusiast. I'm your host Adima Zolkalio, product design and AI expert. And today we're joining a leading AI advisor who will help us help countless organizations navigate the exciting world of artificial intelligence. We'll be discussing what organizations need to know and to truly unlock the potential of AI, from building the right infrastructure to fostering a data-driven culture. Get ready for an insightful conversation packed with actionable advice. Hello, Yogesh. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I'm so happy that you're here. Yogesh Kulkarni is an AI advisor and a PhD. We're live on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook, and you're so invited to join the discussion and ask questions. And now we can start. So let's start with something really basic. What are the biggest challenges organizations face when trying to adopt AI?
Okay. First of all, thanks, Adi. Thanks for the opportunity. The question is very pertinent. Nowadays, there is a pressure to adopt AI. You be a small organization, a startup, a middle-sized company, or a giant. Everybody has to do something in AI, or else you are left out. So there is basically a pressure to do AI, especially for smaller companies. Where if you are not into this domain, if you're not using AI, then there are various problems in sales, in marketing, even in investments. So everybody is trying to be on the same bandwagon of AI. Yeah. For your question, what are the challenges? There are multiple challenges, actually. So I'll probably list one by one. First and foremost is data. So the artificial intelligence that we practice these days is basically based on data. So it's a data science. Far ago, before the earlier part of AI was more or less rule-based expert systems, less data was okay. But these days it is all related to data. So the first challenge is you have to have data to build products and services on top. Okay. And so data has to be available to you, and it has to be of good quality. So quality and availability of data is the first big challenge.
Now, so quality means?
Usability in AI algorithms. It has to be usable, ready to be used. And it should not have junk thing, not usable thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll go to an extent and say, just having data is not sufficient. You have to have unfair advantage of data, meaning you have to have unfair advantage of owning the data. If you are built on some public data by scraping some websites, that's not really a business advantage, right? Anybody can do it. So there is no entry barrier for that. But if you own data which others do not have, then that becomes advantage for you. So first challenge is having good quality and availability of own data, the data that you own yourself, so that is an advantage to your business. So that would be first challenge, I believe. Next is you have to have people. You have to have skills in the organization, expertise in the organization to use that data for building services and solutions, isn't it? So nowadays, the skills are, I would say, diluted in some sense, that those who are writing prompts are considered AI engineers, but that's not the case. There are multiple levels, multiple skills within AI. I would say data analytics would be there, machine learning would be there, deep learning, and then NLP, natural language processing. Those all skills would be needed to build AI-related solutions. So second challenge is, and these skills are not abundantly available. They are scarce. Yeah. So and building your own organization, your own folks, own people, ramping them up to these skills, it is not very trivial job. You have to have certain skill sets, mathematics background, programming background, so on and so forth.
No, I understand what you're saying. So you're saying first data, then the people and the skills, and you're saying it's not easy to find the data scientists, data analysts, people who understand data in general. Programmers who understand data is hard to find too.
Third big challenge is the resistance that people may face. You know, you want to do AI, but people want to do whatever they have been doing for years. Law of inertia. People don't want to change their motion. So people may have resistance. And then another problem is management or external forces may have very different expectations from AI, from you, from your business. Now, nowadays, I would say AI is considered as magic. And as you know, AI is not magic. Primarily, it is a set of probabilistic processes, mostly, more or less, right? They are not deterministic. You have a chance of having this result compared to other results. So it's not deterministic. So understanding of this and managing expectations from either customers or even top management within the organization would be the third challenge for AI businesses.
So do you think managers really understand what is the meaning of generative AI and what is what could be done and what could not be done? What is the good use case for these kinds of technologies?
Generally, I've seen this lack of that awareness. People have come from different backgrounds, normal software development, and suddenly this new beast is on the door. And then we have all heard about the hype. The giants are giving us demos of doing this and doing that. People are surprised by the results, and they want these results tomorrow in your organization. So that awareness is, in my opinion, largely lacking.
I see. So what are the key building blocks for a successful AI implementation? So we mentioned people, we mentioned data, understanding what could or not be done with this technology. What else is missing in order to have a successful AI implementation?
I'll just add one or two more challenges, Adi. So another is, typically, at least the large businesses, they have their existing systems. They're based on whatever software technology stack that they may have. And now they have been forced to use AI. Now, this integration may not be very trivial. So that's one more challenge. Now, what you end up doing, your AI implementation is nothing but a chatbot on the right-hand side, isn't it? Right.
Usually, right now, this is what it is.
Usually, this is what it is. But that's not the full integration of AI capabilities, I believe. And one more challenge is, of course, ethical and regulatory concerns. Now that you are building AI solutions, the results that you produce, you are under obligatory in some cases or legal obligation to be ethical, and you have to have regulation in place. So these are a couple of challenges. I'll take up your next question. What are the building blocks? And more or less, whatever we spoke at challenges, these are actually different building blocks, if you see.
Yeah, you're right.
So first is actually data. So data is the first and foremost building block. What are the sources that are coming, that are bringing data to your organization? Are these sources owned by you? They are in different formats. Some are databases, some are web pages. So this whole data management has to be very strong. Your data foundation has to be very strong. There's some governance. Once the data has come to you, you have to transform it. In earlier days, there used to be, it is still there, there is a technological BI, business intelligence paper.
Right.
And a very famous process is their ETL, extract, transform, and load. So basically data transformation. First talk is data and its transformation. So making it curated so that data scientists can use them. So that's the first building block, Adi, I would say. And second one would be, now that data is available, and of course, from customer need and your business strategy planning, how can we leverage this data? In what form? Under which solutions? What are the use cases that we can cater to using this data? So that would be the second building block, having a clear strategy, clear role. Third thing, we are touching upon the same point, building skills. Do we have expertise, adequate AI skills and talent in your organization? If not, you may have to hire the expertise.
Right.
Another thing that I did not mention as challenges, which is not a challenge, but is a building block. Nowadays, mostly AI solutions are cloud-based, isn't it?
Right.
Because they have to be scalable. Gone are the days when you had local desktop applications. These are no more valid in most cases. So having DevOps, MLOps, and having IT infrastructure, compute power via any of the cloud providers that we know would be another building block. So data, business objectives, AI skills, and a robust IT infrastructure. And of course, the traditional software development, the agile, iterative development is not going anywhere. Even though this is AI software development, it is still a software development, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a bit different, I think, in the fact that you need more skills. So it's not only software development. And the way that you build it is more iterative. So you get more information and then you monitor it and fix it, the definitions, and then go back to see what the inputs that your end users enter to the model. So it's not enough just to create and deploy it. You need to really monitor it afterwards all the time.
And then you said it perfectly right, Adi. Nowadays, things are live. Previously, you had deployed your software and people have installed it. They will use it unless the next release comes. You are still okay to develop things. But now, if there is any problem in the live system, you have to fix it probably same day so that the next day the problem does not see. So the cycle has shortened to almost a day now.
Yeah, and you need someone to really monitor. It depends on how many customers you have and how many transactions, but you need to be on top of the data and what is coming into the system. And what we mentioned is about the ethics part. You need to be sure that because it's not deterministic, that the end users get the right answers and not the wrong thing sometimes. Yeah, it's important in that aspect too. So how can organization assess their AI readiness and identify the best opportunities for AI integration? And not only checkpoints.
Yeah. So some serious applications. Again, on the similar building blocks, we are now assessing if my organization, how much ready it is on these different fronts that we just spoke about. Mm-hmm. So as far as data block goes, how much data we have, how much clean it is, how much transformed. So some kind of data auditing of the data that you own. If you don't own something, where can you get it? You, of course, can get it via public data sources. You can also tie up with some organizations via APIs. You can also get data. So basically, audit of the data would be important to assess the readiness of the organization on AI front. Again, same assessment of the AI skills with people. You may have a programmer, developer team, some QA team, including managers, how much they are aware of AI, some of the things that we spoke. Now there is always a rush to build MVP, the first prototype. And in some cases, most of the cases, Adi, what I've found, the local team may not have those skills. So in my opinion, it is okay to get it done via some external agency as an MVP, put it into field, see the reaction, modify the specs, and then in the meantime, ramp up your team. And that's how you can do parallel efforts in that sense. So
I want to ask you about this MVP. When you're saying MVP, do you think that it should be a third party, like a large language model like Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini? Or you could start with something which is open source, or when you're thinking about MVP, what is the fastest way to do it?
So I think that MVP has to be fast, quick delivery. So in as you said, LLMs, there are three ways you can do this, basically. To customize or build your own LLM in some sense, customize LLMs. Either by prompts, few shots prompting, give some examples. That's the quickest way to show that it is working on my data. We just give some examples from our field, and with prompt engineering, you can get it done. The more complex ways are AG, retrieval augmented generation. You index your knowledge and fetch it, put it in prompt. So that's little more engineering required, but it's your own data. And third would be fine-tuning, building your own customized fine-tuned models. So depending on the skills that you have in the organization and the money that you have with you, you can decide which way to go for building MVP.
So just then I understand you. A few shots or prompt engineering is like the fastest and easiest, and it costs less. RAG is a bit more work, and you need more expertise in order to retrieve the right information from your organization or databases. And fine-tuning is the most expensive because you're paying actually to run the model with the new information and retrain the model with your information.
And then the last, of course, is from scratch, training from scratch, which I think only the big ones can afford in HealthSense. Fine-tuning, of course, does not need that kind of compute, but some compute is, of course, needed. And then some expertise is needed. Right. So, that assessment, with MVP, you can gauge the market. You can test the waters by putting that MVP in the field. So that's one way to assess your AI readiness. Can you put MVP in the market? And then, of course, another way to gauge readiness, Adi, would be see what your competition is doing, basically. What problems they are solving in the same vertical, right? Your industry peers, what they are doing. And your leaders also, those who are in front of you. Which roadmap they are taking up. So that's, and then see where you are compared to them, compared to your peers or leaders. That's another. So these are some of the ways you can check where you stand in AI readiness.
You know, we started with the question of why you should do it, the challenges, the building blocks. But actually, do you think that everybody is rushing and they should rush, or some of them could just rest and not everyone needs to know about AI and it's not that big of what people think? It's not as magical as people think?
Obviously, there are certain things that you should have to do AI. Just because everybody else is doing, the whole town is talking about it, you need not do AI. In my opinion, the traditional software development plus machine learning, deep learning, natural language processing. Now you can call them as classical data science approaches. They are still valid. They are still usable, and they do deliver. Not just generative AI is the holy grail in some sense. It's not the case. The traditional software development still works. So only if you're if you have data, the things that I mentioned, and the market demands it, you have the use case, MVP is going very good, then only I think we should rush, or else it is just a gold rush.
Yeah, because when we just mentioned that everybody is in the end, at the beginning, they're just creating this kind of a smart chat that even the users don't even notice sometimes that it's smarter than the chat that they had before with the rule-based run, right?
Yeah.
And the question is, what is the value that you're creating by using this technology, right? Do your customers appreciate it or need it? And sometimes it's forgotten in this race, right? I need AI, I need it. What do I need it for? What is the right use case? Are my customers willing to pay for it? How much?
Yeah. Right? Okay. I'll just add one more point, Adi. All the use cases, especially generative AI, which is the hype of these days, are not amenable. They're not friendly to solve any all cases, right? So if the problems are linguistic in nature, textual in nature, image related, then of course it is very, very powerful. No doubt about it. But if your data is, say, numeric, it is in tables, then the likelihood of success is even less. And there, the normal software development, machine learning, deep learning, they work fantastically well, right? Then convert this problem to linguistic textual problem and then give it to LLM and then solve it. That's too much, in my opinion.
Yeah, so give me an example of a numeric number. Is like finance, or what comes to your mind?
Yes. Stock price prediction. Let's take a very simple example.
Right.
There could be multiple features while predicting the stock price next day. And most of these features are numeric in nature. How do you convert this problem? Can you put it in a few shots prompt? All this time series data. Of course, there are some approaches to do this, but it needs context. It needs text around it for the classical LLM. Another approach is if you have a SQL database, lots of tables, different joins available. Now, putting that table in a prompt, I'm taking a very specific LLM example, or fine-tuning it with LLM, it's far more tedious, isn't it? So just a digression. So there, the ideal solution, Adi, would be not to put tables, numerical tables, a list of long numerical tables in the prompt or to arrange on it, but to do normal English text to SQL conversion, isn't it? If you get that part right, the SQL will further do the numerical part, the fetching part or the logic part. So instead of doing text to numbers, it's better to do text to SQL like thing, database query like thing. And then the further thing becomes more deterministic, isn't it?
Yeah, I understand. So you need to understand the use case and the technical challenge in order to build the right solution, the best solution, the optimal solution for it. And sometimes people think, okay, we have a database. It doesn't matter whether the content of the data or the size of the database or what kind of database do I have. I would just ask questions and then I would get answers and that's it.
Yeah, magic.
Yeah. So how can an organization foster a data-driven culture that supports AI adoption?
So again, there are multiple ways. So if organization wants to be data-driven, I think it's a big cultural shift. Rather than somebody dictating that these are the decisions you should follow, the decisions themselves have to be data-driven, isn't it? So put something in MVP, collect the data, do A-B testing, whether this option works, this option works. So first point I would say is leadership buy-in. Leadership has to support. They need to be convinced that we have a use case that is suitable for AI-related development. So AI awareness has to be there for that. And they should manage the expectations. Expectations have become wild now. So leadership buy-in and support is the first step in AI adoption, in my opinion. Second one is ramping up the folks. Continuous training. Nowadays, if you do training and then do nothing else, that's not going to work these days. Because newer and newer models are coming every day. You don't have to do training all the time. But at certain interval, a new paradigm comes. Previously, it was say, just ChatGPT. Then RAG came, which is very powerful. Then came fine-tuning ways came. Now there is a talk of agentic system, how AI agents can collaborate and get work done. So different paradigms come. At least at those levels, at those instances, we should do some training in the organization.
Right.
So these are certain ways we can support the AI adoption.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that they need to, that you need the buy-in of the leadership in order to have a good use case for AI adoption, but we're talking about building an AI solution within their company. The other point of view would be use tools of AI applications for fostering better, marketing, sales, whatever process that you want in your company. And for that, you don't need to build anything. You just need to understand the technology and then use the technology in other applications, third parties, and so forth.
Perfect. Adi, I would add one thought here. I consider three profiles for AI-related roles. First is user level. Those who are just using the tools, say doing prompting, say marketing people, management people, they just need to do, they just need to know their own domain and how to do prompt engineering. So these are user people. They just use. Second one is developer. They need to know how to build infrastructure, cloud infrastructure, do RAG, do fine tuning, those things they need to do. Or else at least use these APIs from these cloud providers. They have AI APIs, how to incorporate, how to integrate those APIs. So that's a developer level. And the third one is researcher level. They will invent new things. Of course, for that, your organization has to have very good skills, PhDs and all, and a good amount of money. So the biggies can do research. But at these three levels, you can decide based on your pocket and the skills.
Yeah, so it makes sense. You start with the easiest one, which is the user level. And then you understand the technology, the potential, what could be done, what makes sense to do with it, what is not working with these technologies. At least to understand it as an end user is a big like thing. I think that many people just know ChatGPT, more or less. And it's a great tool. It has the very wide capability. But it's not the best tool for everything, right? Because it's so wide, it's not specific. So I just understand what can or can be done with it. How can an organization measure the success of their AI initiatives?
Yeah. So a little contradictory point, Adi. So your solution may be using AI or may not be using AI. It does not matter in some sense, right? You have a product, how it is doing in the market, that's the bottom line, right? That's the final measurement. So the key performance indicators, KPIs that you have decided for your product, the business objectives, if you want eyeballs, the market reach, the penetration, the logins, the account creation, all these parameters which were there before, still are valid. Your solution may be AI-based or may not be AI-based, right? Does not matter. Just that AI has added few more variables to measure now. And those variables are, of course, latency now. The LLM, at least the LLM-based solution, the costing of it, the compute needed, all these things have got incorporated. So finally, again, the bottom line is ROI, return on investment. If I'm putting this much money in compute, skills, and the API cost, am I getting some percentage on top of it? So these indicators, these metrics are not changing. One point that we touched upon, the feedback loops are smaller now. You immediately see the result, you have to correct it. And we have seen big guys failing in some sense. They've started giving wrong results, wrong images, and they had to withdraw. And that's not bad at all, in my opinion. These things are very, very large, hard to do quality checking, though you have to do quality checking. But once in a while, if things don't work, you have to withdraw if the indicators are not doing correctly.
Yeah, we saw that with the Google images, the Gemini I think it's working right now, but there was a phase that they decided to withdraw with the image creation because it gave like the wrong answers.
Correct.
Yeah. And you think that because it's risky and things happen and it's not happening only for Gemini, Google Gemini, yes. Do you think people are more hesitant to start using this technology because it's risky for the brand, it's risky for maybe getting sued?
That's what I've observed in the field, Ali. People are okay using it for, say, fictional sort of non-critical work. Writing emails, writing proposals, that's okay. Writing poems, that's okay.
Poems, right.
But if you want to do mission critical work, and then, so let's take one example. If you are doing medical document processing, where you have to find the drug name and the effect of the drug. Right, the adverse effects and all. So, and then once the extraction is done, then you have further processes, your own software processes after that. Here you cannot make mistake. Here even if an extra word comes, the meaning becomes different, isn't it? So people are hesitant about using LLMs, at least as we're talking about generative AI, to use it directly. But there are two solutions to this, Ali. One is, of course, good post-processing. Whatever you are using LLM for, once the results come, have prompts to have very structured output. That's one way. Have post-processing, clean it up, and then make it very structured to be usable by the next thing. And another solution is to put human in loop. Don't give the answers directly. Make it very easy to review. Let's take a medical example. If you have a X-ray, chest X-ray, don't give your conclusions directly. Find out conclusions, whatever the observations that the AI is doing, put them in nice format for a medical person to check very easily. And the advantage here is the medical person may miss something in the X-ray, which AI has found out. But once the AI human person checks, then only say okay. So human in loop and post-processing are the solutions for this.
Yeah. What comes to my mind that there are several industries like finance, banking, insurance, medical, that's the one that comes to my mind that will take more time to do any kind of innovation, for sure this kind of innovation. And another thing that is important for these kinds of industries is the transparency of the API answer. So you understand how did the model got this answer and what are the circumstances that maybe a medical, maybe a human, a medical doctor in that case will understand if it makes sense or not.
Yes, yes. Adi, you touched upon a very right point here. The explainability of results, which have started from machine learning, deep learning, and it is very, very valid in generative AI, the LLMs also, because you just don't know where the answer came from. As you know, it's a random process. It just spits out word by word, and there is no provenance. The source is missing. Of course, there are some systems now, like if I can take names, Copilot, Microsoft Copilot, or even Perplexity AI. They give citations where the answer has come from. So citations, the source is very important.
Right. They are both built upon ChatGPT, OpenAI ChatGPT, but they give a better understandable answer to what ChatGPT is doing. But they're both based on the same LLM in that case. And I think that what you said about human in the loop, it's a must in cases that are so crucial. You cannot make any mistake in medical or in finance. Nobody wants to someone to do a mistake in his bank account and then they understand it's wrong or something like that. And in general, these industries are taking longer to do things because they're regulated, because it's very crucial. In other places, the brand is really important, because if they would give an answer that is very wrong or doesn't make sense or even hurting someone or something like that, it would be detrimental for their brand. That's what comes to my mind when thinking about risks related to AI solutions. What are the risks that comes to your mind other than the wrong answer or something which is not ethical or moral?
There are actually costing people mess. I think just because we have to use LLM, you are going for API-based costing. Once the scale goes up, once people start using it, then the costing may skyrocket.
Right.
Another thing that another risk that we are seeing in the field is today this model is giving these answers. Tomorrow it may not give these answers, right? Because either the background model may have changed. It's anyway in some sense it's a creative. There is a factor called temperature. Even with the temperature setting, things are a little random in some sense, right? So deterministicness is not there. So if you build something on top of it, assuming that it will give this answer in this format, this way. So these are some of the risks, cost as well as the deterministicness of the answers.
Yeah. So what we're saying about this model, although it has these weights inside it, it's changing and it's learning because he gets more and more inputs from the end users, and the model is growing and learning further, and we cannot really anticipate exactly what would be the answer in that case.
Just to correct in that sense, the model may not update every day. They will have the release cycles, but once the release a new update comes, say 3.5 now becomes 4 in the background, and you start using 4, then the results may not be seen. Basically, that's what I wanted to say.
And you, of course, you cannot do anything about it if you're using a third party. So you just consume the service in that case.
In that case, correct.
Yeah. I think that as this domain will grow and grow and you get more understanding and more people working in it and more options other than the big three models, LLM models, I think you would have more and more opportunities to do things differently and maybe to have more control over the answer and more specific models for your domain.
Yes, yes.
Because right now these are very large models, very non-specific, very vast, and therefore more vulnerable to making mistakes and not being correct all the time. What are some real-world examples of organizations successfully leveraging AI?
I think we have all seen these examples. All the Amazons and Googles of the world are already using AI. So wherever most of the recommendation engines that we see, buy this product, buy this financial service, all these recommendations engines are typically built using good AI, actually. And then search is becoming more, so you don't get 10 blue links now. You get a nice formed answer. You get good summaries, whatever you need. But I would like to put one more example. It's not really an organization per se, but a government or use case. So as I said, I'm from India, and we have large population.
Right, the biggest one. I think a year ago you passed China, right? Yeah.
And we have different languages, very distinct languages. Mm-hmm. I think more than 22 official languages.
Wow.
And the further you go, the difference is more, in mm-hmm. my opinion. So a few days back, our government demoed use of AI. So our Prime Minister, Mr. Narendra Modi, while addressing people, he spoke in one language and the audience was understanding it in a different language, live translation.
Wow.
And so that's one of the use cases. And that's how I'm saying AI is not just enterprise, organization or academics. It is going into government related things also for masses. AI is becoming for masses.
And so what you mentioned about this, the Prime Minister talking, and you had 22 different dubbing or of his specific speech to all of these languages all at once live.
In that case, he was speaking in Hindi, and the audience was said Tamil. Just one other
language. One. I thought that in at once it was like 22.
No, but this system can translate. But in that event, it was Hindi to Tamil, and the audience was live understanding it in Tamil.
And did it take the pronunciation, the way that he talked?
At least from the face of the people, it looked that they understood very well.
Yeah.
And then this very challenging problem, as you can imagine, translating from one language to other.
Live.
Order may be different, pronunciation is different. You have to have speed, you cannot delay. So
right.
It's a very challenging thing.
It's very hard because sometimes you say a word before the other. Like a verb before you're saying the adjective or something. And in other languages, the order is different. So you need to go to the end of the sentence in order to understand what was really the beginning for some of the languages.
Correct.
It's really hard.
It's very hard, yeah.
And to transfer the pronunciation is really hard because sometimes you're emphasizing it in some part and the meaning of the sentence changes upon the way that you pronounce the words. It's really hard. I think that most people, when they say, okay, we have already translate, we have Google Translate, so what is the difference? But the
yes.
difference is huge. It could be
huge.
Very, very different. And I guess that most people say, okay, it's like very close languages. They're all in India, maybe they're close, but I'm sure it's not. It just sounds to us like they're... It's like very different languages from different areas, and it's
yes.
hard to do that.
Yes.
It's really hard. And when you mentioned governments, is another institution that usually
yes.
goes really, really slow. That
yes.
the fact that your government is doing something with AI that will contribute so widely to their citizens is really special, I think. Most governments,
yes.
they are very... it takes them time until they do something which is innovative. Yeah.
Correct.
Do you think that India is innovative in that sense, doing more
yes.
technology? Yeah.
Very much. I think this government is very pro technology, and the other two examples are that we have digital identity now for most of the folks in India. And we do transactions, however small they are, more or less digitally now. So gone are the days when we are going to banks and putting money, withdrawing money now. Most of the transactions are happening online, digitally now.
And do you see that in villages or places that are not a city? Give me an
Absolutely
example of that.
So there's a payment system called UPI. Now this is a mobile-based payment system with a QR code. Some QR code is used. Even a small vendor in a village is accepting now UPI-based payments. So there has been a big, massive change in India.
It's really important, especially for people who just need a small loan to start something that is related to their farming and to some small businesses that they're doing. And I'm sure it's a huge difference for them, because in the past, because they're so far away, maybe it was so hard for them to get to a bank to do something that gives them value or makes their lives much easier. So I'm happy to hear that. It's important.
Yes, sure.
What advice would you give organizations or companies that are just starting their AI journey?
I think the foremost thing is assess data audit. What data do you have? What are the business cases that you're trying to solve? And I would suggest start small. Don't boil the ocean, basically, that somebody else is doing. Start small. Maybe use, as I said, external vendors to do MVP. Maybe use ready APIs. So there's a GCP, AWS, and then Azure. They have ready LLM-based APIs, if you're talking about generative AI. Use those APIs to build rather than you doing fine-tuning or whatever. Start small. Invest in data quality and talent, because that is going to take you far. So don't put the lock on the purses there. Spend on quality, data quality and talent. And then be mindful of the ethical implications. If you're using AI or not, does not matter. The reasons that your software is going to show to the world, you own it. And if it is wrong, if it is unethical, you have to pay price for it. So you have to be very, very careful before putting something in market. You have to have all the disclaimers. Like ChatGPT had put very nice disclaimer. This is whatever experiment we were still researching. So these are some of the tips I would give to people who are starting now.
Yeah, and what is the number one tip you have for leaders today?
I think just be aware. First, make sure that you understand the capabilities of this AI, and then don't go by the hype. Maybe have some consultations, have AI advisors like me or whoever is available to you. Good assessment of data you have, problems you have, and the market is the first thing. Another very concrete idea that I may give is that as this field is growing very rapidly every day, I would suggest reserve some small team in your organization, which will continuously assess the new LLMs, new approaches that are coming, new AI approaches that are coming. See whether they are useful to us, meaning that organization. Have a small CTO kind of organization, which is constantly on the toes to check whether this is useful for us. And once we see some results, then put it into engineering team, put it to sales. So that would be one concrete advice or tip I would give.
Yeah, you're right. So it's been a pleasure talking to you, Yogesh. I learned a lot and it's been very insightful. So thank you for that. And where could people hear more about your work and contact you?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the best way. You have put my LinkedIn handle in the description. People can contact me, message me there, and I would be happy to talk to them.
Sure.
I would say thanks, Adi, for the opportunity.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for coming. And I think that everyone could learn from what you're saying, because everybody's looking for this kind of solution, but they don't know all the details and even risks that are associated with that, and it's really important for organizations. And I think that I told you that I built a course for executives about generative AI. And what we just discussed about the team, about the cost, about the pricing of these elements, everything is considered there because people need to know about it, and it's not magic as it looks like. It's not. So it's really important. So thank you, and to all of you changemakers out there, thank you for joining us. And if you find this episode valuable, you're invited to share it, and I'll see you next week with another innovative, insightful talk. See ya.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.